Mystic Fix, a program for the whole being, with Julia Gordon-Bramer on Newstalk STL.
Welcome to Mystic Fix. I'm Julia Gordon-Bramer. I'm a poet, I'm a professional tarot card reader, and I'm a scholar of mysticism. And I am real excited to be talking today about the Moon tarot card. The Moon is about all kinds of subconscious dreams and influences that pull on us, much like the moon pulls on the tides of the ocean. So today we've got two incredible guests. We've got Laurel Clark, who is a dream expert, and we've got the psychic witch, Matt Arin. Now let's get into our interview with Laurel. Hi, Laurel.
Good morning.
Laurel Clark is the owner of Whole Life Resources, a dreamologist, a counselor, a mentor, a speaker, an author, an interfaith minister. You were the former president of the St. Louis School of Metaphysics, and we have had representatives from that school before on our show, and the former president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. And dreams are what we're going to talk about today, in line with the Moon card, which is all about dreams and all of that.
Thank you.
I thought first we might go into the significance of dreams, why it's important to even pay attention to them.
You know, that seems like an obvious question for people who do pay attention to their dreams, but not everybody does. So to me, when there's a universal experience, it makes sense to me that there has to be a purpose for it. And dreams are a universal experience. Everybody dreams every night. Some people don't remember their dreams, and because of that, they think they don't dream, but we all do. And the reason why they're so important is that they come from the inner self, what some people would call the soul. There are some dreams that I think come from spirit or from our divine essence. So as we go through our everyday lives and we get busy doing the physical things we do, you know, work, taking care of kids, whatever it is that we do, sometimes we can kind of forget or turn away from the inner self or the soul or the spirit, which is why we're here and it's what nourishes us. So dreams are an open door that can help us to access that.
So you don't think it's, you know, so many people sort of poo-poo it and say that it's just the brain kind of releasing the excess of the day and whatever that is. So you do find deep subconscious significance.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And I've heard some people say, oh, dreams are something to do with the food I ate last night or something like that. What led you to study dreams and dream interpretation?
I think I always was interested in dreams. I mean, I can still remember some dreams that I had when I was kindergarten age. And I don't really know at what point I started keeping a dream journal. I know that when I was a kid, I used to write a lot. I do know that I reawakened my dream journaling practice when I was in college. I was taking a creative writing class, and I had a friend who wrote poetry that had beautiful imagery, and I was kind of envious because my poetry I thought was brainy and not that interesting. So anyway, I asked her, you know, where do you get these images from? And she said, they're from my dreams. So she was the one who encouraged me to put a notebook by my bed, because I knew at that point that I was having dreams, but I also knew that after I was awake for a while, I didn't remember them. So that was 1976 that I regularly began to record my dreams. And then I went to a counselor a couple of years later who was a Gestalt therapist, and she worked with dreams. So that was when I first started to use those dreams beyond creative inspiration to really understanding myself. And then I've kept it up ever since then.
That's really interesting that you have dreams you remember from being a child, because I do too. And I had a recurring dream as a kid where bad guys. You know, my dad used to watch these sort of detective shoot 'em up movies mm-hmm. on Sunday mornings in our house. And so these were like gangster guys, and they would kidnap me, but they were forcing me to drive the getaway car with a gun to my head. And I had this dream 5 or 6 times as a child, and I was so paralyzed because I didn't know how to drive. And I look back on it, and I really do think that reveals a lot about my fearfulness as a kid. And I was sort of on my own very much and kind of floundering and didn't have a lot of guidance. And so, yeah, I think that there was a lot of fear that came up. What do you think about those kind of recurring dreams? Do you think that's a message that's just screaming at us that we have to pay attention to?
I do. You know, if you think about it, if you had a friend who was in trouble or who needed help, and you offered some kind of advice and they didn't listen to you, probably you might wait a little while, but you probably would present it again. You wouldn't just try one time and then give up. And I look at our dream self as being like a friend that wants the best for us, that wants us to grow, that wants us to heal. And so if there's something that we're missing in our waking state of consciousness, the dreams will give us some assistance. And if we don't listen or don't remember, it will present it again until we do start to pay attention.
Do you believe we share common symbols? You know, sometimes I look at some of these dream interpretation books and they seem a bit, you know, this means that and this other thing means this other thing. And it just seems a little, maybe, you know, there could be cultural bias. There could be just age bias. People haven't all experienced the same kind of things for symbols to be universal necessarily. Or do you disagree with that?
I do believe that there are universal symbols. I don't believe that there are universal meanings. And what I mean by that is a car, for example. Even if we lived in a culture that didn't have cars, there would be some kind of similar vehicle, like a rickshaw or a small boat or something like that. And the purpose of a small vehicle is to get us from place A to place B. So if you look at the metaphor or the imagery of that, a related in our waking life vehicle that gets us meaning the soul, the inner self, that gets us from place A to place B is our physical body. So I believe when someone has a dream about a car or some other small vehicle, it's a dream about their body, their physical body. Now, in terms of what that means, like, let's say you and I had a dream that we were driving up a hill and ran out of gas. So a hill, I would interpret as some kind of challenge or obstacle. And the car being the physical body, the gas is fuel for the car. So universally, I would interpret that as saying each one of us has a challenge or obstacle in our life. As we are trying to deal with it, trying to overcome it, we're getting exhausted. We're running out of gas. But individually, we each would need to say, okay, well, what is the challenge in my life? Is this a challenge? Is it an obstacle? And what am I doing that's causing me to get exhausted? You know, for me, it might be I'm worrying too much. For you, maybe you're burning the candle at both ends. So that's where the individual dreamer's determination of, how does this apply to me? What's going on in my waking life, my waking state of consciousness? That's where the individual interpretation comes in.
You've got me thinking of two recurring dreams now. One my husband has. He's had his whole life these airplane dreams where a jet of some kind will crash and he will be running. You know, he's always on the ground. He's not on it, but he's running to help or running to get to the wreckage. And in our marriage, he's had this dream, gosh, more than 10 times, I think. And he's always like, oh, had another airplane dream. And I'll be darned if I can figure that out. And I'm usually pretty good at decoding dreams, but that one, I don't know. You got any ideas?
So if it's a large plane, like a passenger vehicle, I would interpret that as a group or organization. So the airplane crashing, it could be his job, it could be an organization he's involved with, it could be a church, you know, that would be up to him to determine that there's some kind of crash that's happening and he's trying to save the day. So if it's recurring, what I do when I have a recurring dream is, if I can, to relate what's been happening in my waking life and my waking, not even so much the events, but more in my thinking, and what are the parallels in the times that I'm having this dream today and I had it a month ago. And that can help me to see how it's related to my waking state.
Okay, yeah, that's really interesting. So what techniques do you use to interpret dreams? I know when I was in a writing group, we had a sort of a creative exercise, and we would write the words. Well, first of all, we would write out every detail of our dream we could remember, and the feelings, and if we could smell something or hear something, you know, the most minute details. And then we would write the phrase "part of me" after every noun. So I would be like, the Julia part of me is talking to the Laurel part of me on the Mystic Fix part of me, you know, and I would be going on through this. And it made an interesting kind of sense when we were done. So that was a technique that I learned. But how do you approach it?
So that's a good technique that you're describing, because it helps the dreamer become aware that everything in the dream is a part of them, that the people are not really other people. It's different aspects of ourselves that those people symbolize to us. I don't use that phrase, but I do look at dreams from that perspective of everything in the dream being a part of me or a part of the dreamer. Another really helpful thing is to, especially if it's a long, involved dream, to give it a title. And you can probably relate to this because you're an author. To title a dream involves encapsulating its essence. So, like, let's say I had a long involved dream that I was trying to get somewhere and I couldn't find where I was going. And then I discovered that I lost my wallet, and then I couldn't forget who I was supposed to meet. If I were going to title that, I might title it as Lost, because even those seem like disconnected scenes, the common theme is right. That I lost something. I lost my way. I lost my wallet. I lost my calendar. So giving it a title can help to kind of bring together what seem like different elements of the dream into the common meaning. Another really helpful way to look at a dream is to draw a picture of it, because in a similar way, drawing a picture can help us to kind of put together the main theme. Another thing is to look at the dream as a story and say, okay, I have the title. What's the theme? Who are the characters? What's the plot? Some dreams don't have a plot. Like, I sometimes have dreams that are a conversation without any action. And so that can help to give the dreamer some, what the essence of the dream is.
Okay. What do you say to people who don't think they can remember their dreams?
So that's a pretty common experience. And there are things that people can learn to remember dreams. First of all, is to have good sleep habits. So especially in this day and age, if we're looking at a phone or a computer or a TV screen shortly before going to bed, it interferes with being able to fall asleep and to get into that deep state of sleep. So one thing I would recommend to people is to stay off of devices if they can for an hour or even two before going to bed, and to do other things that can help promote deep sleep, like not having any lights on in the room, using room darkening curtains, not having noise in the room. So the more quiet and dark the room is, the easier it is to go into that deep state of sleep. And it's very important to have something to record the dreams, like a notebook that you put by your bed, Some people like to use a voice recorder. For me to speak the dream out loud, I have to wake up too much, so I prefer to write it down. Yeah. And then before going to sleep, to tell yourself, I want to remember my dreams. And that might seem really simple, but most people don't even think about that before they go to sleep. And our mind is very responsive to our desires. So if I'm telling my subconscious mind, I want to get to know you, I'm interested in what you have to tell me, I want to remember the dream, and then I'm prepared to capture it with a notebook there, that in itself can make a huge difference in remembering dreams.
I have pages and pages of notebooks with this very childish scrawl from, I'm writing in the dark, and sometimes one line is on top of another, and it can be a real bear to translate in the morning. But that's important to me too. And sometimes I'll get lines from poems and that sort of thing. Gosh, Laurel, I could talk to you all day about this. This is so much fun. What projects do you have coming up? Is there anything you'd like to talk about?
Sure. I have a couple of classes coming up. I'm going to be teaching one on healing dreams, how to ask for dreams to help with healing a physical disorder, healing emotional difficulties, and another class coming up on discerning your life purpose with dreams.
Nice, nice. And how do people reach you, Laurel?
They can go to my website, which is laurelclark.com, or they can email me at laurel@laurelclark.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being on Mystic Fix, and hope to have you on again sometime.
Thanks, Julia. Hope you have sweet dreams.
Thank you. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with author, psychic, witch, Matt Horan. North and south. Is if I ever
lose my mouth. This is Mystic Fix with Julia Gordon Bramer on News Talk STL. Moonshadow, moonshadow,
leaping and hopping on a moonshadow. In part one, we talked to dreamologist Laurel Clark. But now, what do you know about magic? Maybe you already use magic, consciously or subconsciously. Let's talk to psychic witch Matt Horan to learn more. So Matt Horan, welcome to Mystic Fix.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Matt, you are a witch, a professional psychic and occult teacher. You're the author of the, and I was so impressed by this, multi-award winning book, Psychic Witch. And you're a high priest in a sacred fires tradition of witchcraft. You teach at the Modern Witch University and have a regular column, Extrasensory Witchcraft, in Witches and Pagans magazine, right? Did I cover all the bases?
You covered a lot of them.
So there's probably more.
There's a lot, but it's yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not necessary.
Well, so I have a copy of your beautiful new book, Mastering Magic. A course in spell casting for the psychic witch. Let's start first as your journey as a psychic witch and why you felt compelled to write this.
So this book was always going to be written. This was started with my first book, Psychic Witch. But when writing a book, publishers want you to stick with the word count. Right. So I had to figure out, well, what's my focus going to be? So I focused on the first book on primarily psychic ability and meditation and sort of performing magic by reverse engineering the process of psychic ability to manifest. And I left out anything that requires like tools or materia or herbs or anything like that. So then mastering magic was where I got to discuss those things after we got the foundation of sort of getting that internal system set up. Although I do kind of cover the bases, like the what you need to know from the first book in this book.
Yeah. So what sets this book apart from others in the market as far as spell casting goes?
Well, a lot of it is my experience of what makes a spell actually work. Because I hear from a lot of people that they try spells and it just doesn't, it either doesn't manifest or it manifests in a way that they did not intend it to. So a lot of this is my like tried and true tricks over the last couple decades of working magic and what I have learned. There's a lot of contributors in it. I wanted people to get sort of an idea of other magical workers, witches and non-witches, and how they work and how they approach magic. Because I do believe that magic is something that should be personal, and it should be something that you resonate with. So if a book is telling you to do something one way, and you're doing it and doing it and doing it, and it's not working, you know, perhaps you need to figure out why and how that can be tailored to you as a person and your spiritual path.
So what are some examples of some of the spells that you have in this book?
So this book is very focused on psychic ability. There's some what we consider basic things such as protection and cleansing and stuff like that, which are necessary for a magical practice and just kind of a spiritual life in general. But most of the book, most of the spells in the book are focused on activating your psychic ability and awakening your psychic ability. So it kind of creates an Ouroboros with the first book, where there's this feedback loop of using psychic ability to enhance your magic. And then this book is like, here's some magic to enhance your psychic ability. And that kind of combination helps one to approach what we call in witchcraft the mysteries, which are sort of a personal gnosis path of self-realization. So they're things that even in like witchcraft or other mystery traditions, you can talk about, you can explain, but you can't really convey it fully to someone else unless they have the experience. One of the metaphors I often use to try to explain this is either sex or hallucinogenics. Both concepts, before you have that experience, you can kind of explain to someone what it's like and they can have sort of an idea of what you mean, but until they actually have that experience, they right. aren't going to be on the full page with you, and their experience may be very, very different from your own, because it's more about what their soul needs. So I'm very big on, you know, finding what works for you and your path without trying to force a specific belief system on someone. Even the structure that I give of theory, I'm very clear in the first book, and I believe I mentioned it in the second book too, is that we see them as reality maps. So they're sort of ideas that help us navigate things, but they shouldn't be confused for the terrain. You know, they're just helpful maps.
Yeah. Do you think there's a difference between a witch and a magician?
Yes and no. I mean, it depends on who you ask. So I personally see a difference. I see witches as magicians. I don't see all magicians as witches. Magicians is a broad term, just like witchcraft. But witchcraft has sort of a history behind it of there's sort of an oppositional current to witchcraft. And what I mean by that is it's often very outside of major religious structures or political structures.
A lot
whereas,
of baggage.
Ceremonial magic often is more in alignment with a religious tradition like Judaism or Christianity or something of that nature. Whereas witchcraft is sort of always kind of on the outskirts, kind of on the margins. One of the folk tales that we have, like sort of a modern myth, was given to us by Charles Leland, this folklorist, centuries ago. And he apparently got his lore from an Italian witch. And in that myth called Aradia, the goddess Diana from Greek mythology sent down Aradia because there was tyranny in the land. You know, there was a lot of corruption. So it was a way to balance out the playing field by by sending this person to teach magic to people so that they could gain a leverage. I know ancient Egyptian mythology has a very similar myth with deities of what they call Heka, which is our term for magic, being given to sort of help balance the playing field in terms of fate and destiny.
Okay. And isn't magic really just energy and intention, right?
Yeah. Intention is a word that I often try to define, though, because magic is a little bit more focused than intention. So the way that I explain it is I see a difference between intention and will. So intention is necessary. Intention is like, I want to cross the street, but you can intend to cross the street all the time. You can put as much thought power into it, but until you actually will yourself to cross the street, you're not going to cross the street. So one of the key definitions of magic that you'll constantly come across is the keyword of will being put in there. And it's often capitalized, which gives it a different connotation. It's a reference to true will. So it's about being in alignment with your higher self and with sort of the divine will. The closest comparison, and I don't want to say it's the same thing, but the closest comparison would be like Buddhism or Hinduism with their concept of dharma and right. being in alignment with your dharma.
That's exactly where I was kind of going. Yeah. And one of the things I love and one of the things that I'm always seeking to do on my program is unite these belief systems, these very diverse, you know, oftentimes radically different belief systems that have some of the same energies and ideas beneath them. And you can find a lot of mysticism even in Christianity and Judaism. And So what would you, do you recommend that that a beginner start with your first book, or can they plow right into Mastering Magic? I liked how you called it sort of an Ouroboros, because, you know, it doesn't matter where you begin in an Ouroboros, but you, please go on, explain how you would treat a beginner here.
Yeah, so I had difficulty as an author approaching the second book because the second book builds on the first book.
Okay.
But I know that some people are going to pick up the second book as their first book, you know? So as an author, I have this dilemma of like, do I just say, see the material in my first book, or do I repeat the same things in the second book? And so the way that I approached it is I present the core things you need to know about like grounding and centering and entering alpha, and kind of the primary nuts and bolts of Psychic Witch. But the way that I approached it was based on feedback from my first book, because I had several people telling me that they either had aphantasia, which is the inability to see images in their mind's eye, or that they had ADHD and had trouble focusing. So I crafted like, I think 25 different like energy techniques, and I got a group of friends who were diagnosed with those things, and I had them experiment and see what I could get to work for them. And what ended up working were like 4 or 5 of them that I put in the book. So you can start with either. I highly recommend starting with Psychic Witch, but it's really a personal decision. I have made it to where you can just pick up Mastering Magic and start there.
Yeah. And you have actual tools in the book. You've got sigils, and which for those who don't know are kind of symbols, right, to focus on, to meditate on and bring energies to you and kind of keep your energy directed. Do you have, are there essential tools for a psychic witch?
For a psychic witch, I would really just say it's your mind. That's why the first book isn't focused on any of that at all. And one of the things that is different about Mastering Magic and is different about my approach with magic is even when we're approaching tools and herbs and stuff of that nature, I have a very animist bend. So it's more about connecting with the spirit of that tool or that herb instead of just using it as like an ingredient in something, you know.
It's not a recipe.
Yeah. So a lot of that still has to deal with that sort of that inner connection and the direction of energy. So like psychic witch is really focused on that sort of energy manipulation and energy mastery that will make magic when you step to traditional spellcraft more powerful and more palpable.
Yeah. Matt, are there any myths or misconceptions you would like to debunk?
Oh my gosh, there's so many.
I thought there might be.
ranging from, you know, like that this is some sort of like satanic practice, right, to, you know, the idea that it's a modern practice, which it is in a lot of regards. A lot of the revival of witchcraft specifically in the West is modern, but it has roots in very ancient things. You know, it didn't just like invent itself overnight. It draws on like ancient Hermeticism and like ancient Neoplatonic thought. And a lot of that has sort of been lost in mainstream writings of witchcraft. And I try to bring that back so people can see, you know, the depth that actually is in witchcraft and its mysteries.
So some of this is as old or older than Christianity, even.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And in fact, Christianity, the church was heavily influenced by Neoplatonism as well. Sure. So you'll end up seeing similar concepts. So even their idea of the Trinity comes straight from Neoplatonism. And we have documents of like church founders debating on, you know, like, should we incorporate this? Should we not? You know, it's too pagan, you know, it's pagan, but you know. But we do have these roots in the West that started with Plato and kind of grew from Neoplatonism, which was sort of like a second wave with different influences on the teachings of Plato.
Yeah. So Matt, are there any ethical considerations that a witch should keep in mind when doing spell casting and magic?
Yeah. You know, I am very big on the idea of sovereignty. And that is one of the things that sets a witch apart, is that we are responsible for ourselves and our actions. So ethics are a personal thing, and I think it's a learning experience. You know, some people will go as far as to say, you know, you shouldn't do anything that violates anyone's free will or harms anyone. I disagree. I don't think anything's as clear cut and dry. For example, let's say that you have a serial killer in your neighborhood, to use an extreme example, you know, and you have the means and the powers to stop them, but you don't because it's violating their free will. So which is the greater good and which isn't? And that becomes an issue of ethics.
What about something like a love spell? Because if somebody is not attracted to a person, they should have the right to not be attracted to that person, right? And, you know, versus being put under a spell.
I personally agree. So I'm a big advocate of doing magic on yourself, only on yourself and for yourself. Okay. You know, there are times when things need to be done for community or for other people, definitely. But the way that I approach love spells is I recommend doing a love spell on yourself first and foremost, and then doing love spells that draw the right partner into your life instead of targeting a specific person, because then it gets into a very non-consensual thing.
Yeah,
you know, weirdness. And I think when anything comes to non-consensus or violating free will, it should be justified. So I would say that love spells don't fall under that justification of why you would use, you know, that sort of a thing. So an example is one of my teachers, Lori Cabot. She was on Unsolved Mysteries like way back in the day. And she was on it because she's a witch in Salem, and she's known for her psychic ability. And there was a woman, Martha Bradford, who went missing. And police couldn't figure out anything about it. And eventually one of the police officers, I guess his wife was a student of Lori's, so she convinced him to go see Lori. And so she tuned in and was like, here's what happened. There was like this boat incident with this man, her body's in the water over here. So they went and they looked and they found the body. So they come back and they're like, you're right, but we can't find the man. We can't find where he's fled to. He's completely gone. So she does her thing again. She enters Alpha. She's like, okay, well, I see him approaching like the Canadian border right here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a binding spell on him so that he makes a horrible mistake that will end up getting him caught. And she did, and they found him exactly there because he went into a cabin that was empty, and the neighbors knew, oh, those people only come during like a seasonal time, the owner. So they called the cops, and the cops arrested him. So that's technically a violation of his free will. She imposed her will. Ethics aren't clear cut, you know. It's very personal. My main thing is don't be a dick with your magic, you know, don't be a bully. Don't be creepy with it. Because I do think that these things do come back to you, whether it comes back times three, like some people believe, or sometimes just the results of the manifestation can be enough punishment. In the 90s, I grew up with the movie, The Craft. I don't know if you saw that or not. So Rochelle, who's played by Rachel True, the African-American character, she does a curse on her racist bully, Laura, who's blonde, and the curse works, and they're on a swim team together, and the curse is to have her lose all her blonde hair, and she comes across her in the locker in the shower crying with her hair falling out, and you can see Rachel just feels horrible to the core. And I think that's a great, even though it's fantasy, a great illustration of sometimes it's very like the oldest motif in all of folklore, all of fairy tale, all of mythology is be careful what you wish for. And in Astrain Magic, I put a strong focus on like, okay, well, like, let's figure out exactly what you want and the best route to get it without any mishaps. But I think when it comes into violating free will like that, I think as long as you're not like a sociopath, you know, it's going to hurt you. I also believe that magic itself is intelligent. I see it more as like a spirit being an animist. And I think that you can lose it. I think it can see like, no, we're not gonna work with you in this way. So I think the golden rule is the best, but I do believe that there are acts of justice that sometimes are necessary.
Well, Matt Oren, this went by so fast, but I just want to say Llewellyn is offering one of our people in the audience a free copy of your wonderful book, Mastering Magic, A Course in Spellcasting for the Psychic Witch. And oh my gosh, I would love to have you on again sometime. Is there a way people can contact you if they wanted to reach out?
Yeah, so I'm on pretty much all social media as Matt Oren, MATAURYN. Be careful with imposters. They're rampant right now. So if there's a misspelling, if there's punctuation, if quote unquote, I message you being like, hey, I would like to talk you into a reading. Like,
right.
Not me block
we
them
all get those. Them. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. That was author and psychic witch Matt Oren. In part three, we'll do some tarot card readings. Stay tuned.
Yes, I'm being followed by a moon shadow. Moon shadow, moon shadow.
Would you like to get a free reading on Mystic Fix or get your name in the hat for a book giveaway? What are you waiting for? Visit mysticfix.com for details. Next up, tarot card readings.
Our spiritual journey tonight will begin.
Can't outrun your fate.
Let me tell you about you.
I know who you are, what you are, and why you have come.
Take a good look at these cards, young man. They contain all the secrets of the universe.
What does it say?
Let's take our first caller.
Hello?
Hi, is this Trina?
Yes.
Hello, it's Julia from Mystic Fix. Do you have a question for me today?
Yes. Hi, Julia. My question is money.
Oh, okay.
How does money look for me?
Okay, let's
Let's take a look.
Everyone's second favorite question. The first favorite is love. Okay. So the good news, Trina, is of the seven cards I put down for you, three of them are money cards. And some of the others are not bad cards at all.
Okay.
What I would say is they could be a little better. Right now, Ace of Pentacles is in reverse. This is a card of new beginnings around money, and it just means that something is delayed coming to you. Oh, did I say you actually have four money cards, by the way? So that's good. So regardless of this delay, your next card is Page of Pentacles, which means you're starting something, usually a new project or initiating something. Pages are sort of like on the ground floor beginning, but you're going in the right mm-hmm. direction. And the Page of Pentacles holds the gold coin in his hand. So really, it's a solidly good, positive card around money. Now, your next card is the Four of Wands, and this is about stability. So even if you don't feel like there's tons of money, I do see you being stable. And I will say that the Four of Wands can also be a card of the home. And so sometimes it can be money going into the home or home value, that sort of thing. But it feels positive and good, and that is just showing within the next 3 months for you. Now,
awesome.
Your top card is a King of Cups. And this is interesting. You've got another king in the spread a little further, a King of Wands. It does seem to me that you might have a belief system that you'll really make it when you have a male partner. And that's sometimes true for women, but is not essential, of course. There's plenty.
Wow. You are absolutely right, because I even said that today in a business meeting. Uh-huh. And wow. Yes.
So I would like you to drop that belief. It's not fact. I mean, sure, it can help, but it isn't how it has to be. So your next card is the Six of Pentacles in reverse. And this is interesting because it is a card of giving too much. And so when we do for everyone else, when we give people breaks, when we don't value ourselves and maybe discount our services, then it's going to hurt you. Mm-hmm. I always like to say we teach the world how to treat us by what we put up with. So if you are putting up with not being valued, people are going to continue not to value you. So I'd really like you to kind of change that energy. So the next card I have is a King of Wands. So that's more of that kind of masculine belief. It can also be that some of these guys are in your life or supportive in some way. I mean, this energy is not a bad thing. I would just like to see you more independent and not feeling like you have to depend on a man. And your mm-hmm. last card is excellent. It's the Seven of Pentacles. And this is a card of saying, I have put my time in, I have worked hard, and I'm reaping the rewards. So it tends to take a while. It's not an overnight thing. But I am seeing, basically, Trina, everything is positive. It's just that you're maybe not valuing yourself. You're giving too much away and hoping for that man to kind of, you know, make everything better. And I just want to tell you, you're doing everything right. Keep doing it, but drop those attitudes that aren't serving you. Okay?
Okay. Okay. Very well. Very good.
Excellent.
Thank you.
You betcha. All right. Have a great day. Do you ever wonder about some of the more personal tarot card readings I do? The ones you don't see or listen to here? The affairs, the swindles, even the murders that have shown up in the cards? Then you might be interested in my forthcoming book, Tarot Life Lessons, available for pre-order right now on Amazon.com. Learn what it's like to be a professional tarot card reader from the stories from my journals. It'll also help you if you're looking to read tarot cards for yourself. Tarot Life Lessons will be published and available November 7th with Destiny Books, but you can pre-order it now. We've been doing some Mystic Fix for some 18 episodes now. Please know it could not have happened without our sponsor, Kamaflight. Kamaflight is an improvisational
somatic practice that reconnects to the trusting joy of childhood physicality. It's a unique fusion of acro yoga and so much more, with a wide range of extended poses evoking surrender and trust. KamaFlight creates intimacy and connection, and it feels good. KamaFlight's workshops are held at the Chosen Retreat Center in Sebastian, Florida. For more information, check out KamaFlight on Instagram. That's at KamaFlight. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe on YouTube. And know that the video cast is often slightly longer since we don't have the same time constraints as radio. And visit mysticfix.com to get in on free tarot card readings and book giveaways. Thanks to our moon-guided guests. See you next week for another episode of Mystic Fix. And are you gonna stay the night?